let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Larry Farrar's We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls has been called a window on the idyllic days of long ago. That will enchant those who live through them, may prompt younger readers to recoup some of the essence. A delightfully funny book written by a modern-day Will Rogers about the consequence of growing up during the 1940s and 50s in an unassuming small town hidden in the Appalachian foothills. The Wall Street Journal described the author's hometown as intact but decaying, pure 19th century. Larry retired from Kimberly Clark Corporation as senior vice president. Larry and his wife, Roberta, now live in Columbia, Tennessee, close to their two sons, three grandchildren. His professional career included certified public accountant and officer, managerial responsibility within four major international corporations, hobbies, motorcycle touring and car racing, the Sports Car Club of America sanctioned races. Larry Farrar, author of We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls, is our guest on This Week in America. Larry, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rick. And I want to mention it's an honor to be on your program. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the program. I'm really fascinated by this book and your sense of humor and looking back over time. And let's start with the basics. What was the inspiration? What was it about your past that you thought, you know, this is a book that I would enjoy writing and I think people would enjoy reading as well?
Eric, I think we can blame my book on a number of people. Ever since I left home about, I don't know, 50 or some years ago, I would relate a story from back home, or I'd mention a character, one of the old characters, or even a nickname. And a lot of people would say, Larry or Mr. Farrar, you got to get this down. You got to write a book. So when I retired, I kind of ran out of excuses. And the second reason was that you mentioned there the Wall Street Journal article. I was pretty sure that there weren't too many people in West Middletown, probably none, that subscribed to the Wall Street Journal. So I wanted to get that down for people, kind of a thing. So those were the two big reasons.
And the book is We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls. Larry Farrar is our guest and the author. That's F-A-R-R-A-R. Book available at stratton-press.com in their bookstore. You'll find it, of course, at Amazon, the usual places. Let's go back to the Wall Street Journal. Why do you think they were interested in a small town in the Appalachian foothills?
Well, my secretaries asked the same thing. it is a very historical town and a kind of a unique happening to it, if you will. It was mostly populated back in the mid and late 1700s. And by the old 1810 or so forth, West Middletown was a thriving, growing community. It was in an ideal situation in terms of the distance from the Ohio River and different other communities. And this was a period where the pioneers were coming over the mountains or the Appalachians, going through that part of southwestern Pennsylvania and on into Ohio and Illinois, Northwest Territory. So when it was announced that there was going to be a federal and state-funded highway, or I shouldn't say highway, a trail from the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area on up into the territory, and it was to go through southwestern Pennsylvania, the supposition was that because of the location and amenities and so forth of West Middletown, that the road would go through there.
Yes.
But it didn't. It didn't. It went through a local town. And that was the seed, if you will, that just caused West Middletown to just stop right there.
The book is We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls. Larry Farrar, the author, is our guest on the program. I love that title. It's an interesting title. It captures your attention right away. You read it twice to make sure you read it correctly the first time.
Yeah, all right.
Why that title? How did you come up with the title?
Well, Rick, as I pointed out, I think in the last chapter of the book, that was my way of saying that we all had the same opportunity. We all were exposed to the same virtues, where if we realized that, and we worked on it, it would give us a better than average chance of being successful in your life. And that's the reason I said it that way.
You know, in the book, you couldn't have been very old when you wrote the book and talk about World War II. What do you remember about World War II?
Well, I remember a lot. I can remember if it were yesterday when my mother came out of a neighbor's house and said, "The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor." But a small community is like a family anyway, and that kind of thing just draws it closer together, such as we're going through today. But I remember my dad put a big map of Europe on the kitchen wall, and there was a pin in every place where we knew when the service men or women were. I remember my mother volunteering for a plane spotter. I remember the blackouts. We hung blankets up to the windows. We were only allowed one light in the house at a certain time. I remember when all the service people came back, Dad forgave any debt that they may have had at the store there. And there were no Gold Star mothers in West Middletown, which was good. And Rick, I remember one thing. Women could not buy nylon hose during World War II. So some companies developed something and they called it leg paint. And that's what it was. The women painted their legs with this leg paint. And if you were relatively close, it looked good. But we soon realized that if you looked behind at the calf, if there was a seam coming down here, it was a nylon. If it wasn't, it was a leg paint. Not how that helped win the war, but anyway.
Well, I love those recollections, and they're still, you're talking about them like they happened just a week ago. These are vivid recollections, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, those kinds stick.
You know, in the book, you talk about the time you spent in the service, and you talked about during World War II and how you were attuned to what was going on during that period. The time you spent in the service, did that help or hurt?
Well, it started out kind of hurting because that was time when you had the draft board. And I was down in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. I had signed a professional contract with the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. I was down in the minor league training camp. Got word from the draft board that I remember the numbers. They were taking 30 to 40 a month, and I was number 93 on the list. So I went back home, and I volunteered to get it over with quickly. And I volunteered for the paratroopers. So I spent the next 2 years as an American airborne trooper in Fort Bragg. When I first got in the Army, of course, they give you all kind of tests, intelligent tests, IQ tests, a lot of leadership tests and work. And the results, Rick, were surprising. They said, hey, you're good, great. Matter of fact, they even tried to talk me into re-upping for a year to go to officer school. But I said, no, I don't think. Plus, I associated and worked with a lot of fine young men that had been graduated from some of the best universities in the country. And there were a few that didn't impress me all that much. So I knew I could compete with them. So when my 2 year service was up, I was ready to go back to school, which I did. So as I say, one of three of the best things that ever happened to me. The other two was I got rid of my stutter that I had when I was a young kid, and I was fortunate enough to marry a wonderful woman. So those were the three that made me, I'll tell you.
And what a life you had with the children and the grandchildren and the career that you had that I talked about in the beginning of the program. Larry Farrar, F-A-R-R-A-R, our guest, author of the book We All Rode on the Same Outhouse Walls. Let's talk about culture. And as you look at it, and you write so vividly of the culture, what you went through growing up back during that period, then and now, how do you compare the culture?
Look, I think the biggest difference that I noticed was back then, the traditional American family was really the traditional American family. Every kid in town had a mother and father. Yes. Their mother and father had mothers and fathers, and the culture just came down. And women were thought of differently back then, and I think they thought to themselves that they were differently, in that they were the individual that kept that family together. They were the glue that held it together. They spent much, much more time with the children. And they were the ones that developed the character, the work ethic, et cetera, in that child that would follow them for the rest of their life, better or worse. So that made a big difference. And as you might guess, marriage was kind of a lifetime sentence back then. Right? I kind of left my hometown after there for 27 years, and not one divorce happened in that 27 years. And I asked my wife, who lived in a neighboring town, maybe four times larger than ours, 28 years, not a single divorce. So that doesn't happen too much today. I think that there's fewer and fewer young people that feel that getting married and raising a family is part of being an adult. They're finding other things to do. Another big difference, of course, was patriotism, but that was very easy to do during World War II.
Yes.
And faith. Faith would just beat into us. So that was definitely a difference. But those were the main difference in the culture. Individually, people, the old timers might be a little narrow-minded. I know a friend of mine said that he didn't know very much, but what he did know, he knew as well as anyone. And so that's kind of the attitude. Racism, yes, but not so much in my hometown for the blacks, but for the quote-unquote the foreigners. There was a racism against them, no question about it. But the result of the traditional American family, I think, was the biggest and caused the biggest difference in the culture.
It's interesting you talk about the ingredients that went into the childhood in the small community you lived in. You've been very successful professionally as well as personally. Talk about the small town culture. Did that contribute, do you feel, to who you are today as a person and the success that you've had today?
Yes, definitely did. For one reason, growing up in a very small town, you are part of a family, as I mentioned before. And I say that gossip was an art form. The spotlight was always on you. They wanted to know what you had done or where you did it, and if appropriate, to whom, kind of a thing.
Yes.
So there's a difference there. In terms of being a success in business, working in my father's store at a young age, maybe started when I was a freshman in high school, that definitely helped. I've been told that the three things that made me successful, one is the ability to get along and work with people. And working in a small store, in a small town, definitely helped that. The other one was personality. I guess that goes along with the first one. But the big gift that I had, and it was a gift because I have no idea where it came from, Rick, was during the hiring process, I had this innate ability to pick outstanding people. And I've always said, I've been asked after I give speeches, how are you successful? Why are you successful in a large corporation? And I says, you hire people who are smarter than you are and then get out of their way. Well, Rick, I may mention both of those are pretty easy for me to do.
Well, that's cool. But that's so difficult for some people to do that. They're intimidated by someone that they may perceive as knowing more, and to turn it over to them is somewhat difficult. To understand that is a key to the success that you've had. Larry Farrar, our guest on the program, his book is We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls. Let's talk a little bit about growing up there. Were you happy growing up, and were there drawbacks? I think you touched on that everybody in town knows what Larry's up to. So when you're in a small town like that, everybody knows what everybody else has going. Were you happy growing up, and were there some drawbacks growing up? And maybe you didn't even know them at the time.
Rick, I think contented would be the best word. We knew where we were. We knew where we were going, probably nowhere. And we knew what we were going to do after we got there. No one went on to a college, but we were just happy. We could leave home right after breakfast and be gone, and our mothers wouldn't know where we were till dinner time, and they had no problem at all because it was so safe. It was really enjoyable, and yeah, we were happy. The drawbacks, quite often some things are both good and bad. I mentioned that we were all subjected to the attributes which we needed. But the problem, the bad part, in a small town, there were no mentors. There were no one to say, Larry or Joe or Helen, you can do it. You can compete with anybody out there. And we knew that there was something out there, but we just weren't sure that we had the nerve, the guts, and the ability to go after. So that definitely was a downside.
Where did you draw on that? You mentioned when you were in the military and saw other people, highly educated people, and you knew you could hold your own certainly with them. Where did that come from, them, that self-confidence that you had, that I can hold my own. I'm an equal, if not better than these.
Well, the big difference I noticed was good old common sense.
Yes.
And that is one thing that you do learn in a small town in the Appalachian foothills, no question about that. And the work ethic. And the work ethic was very, very important. And that's one of the first things that you learn where you observe. But the problem was that, as I mentioned before, we didn't know that we would have the ability, and we didn't have anybody telling us about that. So, as I say, I didn't find out about it until I was in the service years later.
With us on the show, Larry Farrar. The book is We All Wrote It on the Same Outhouse Walls. The book's available at stratton-press.com. In the bookstore, you'll find it Amazon, the usual places. Some of the topics today, I'm curious to see what the situation was back then. And let's talk about gun ownership, gun violence. Hot topic today. What was it like back then, especially in that area where you grew up?
Rick, best way I can answer that is, when I was 15 years old now, I had two 20 caliber rifles. One was a single shot antique. The other was a Mossberg 22 rifle with a magazine. I had my grandfather's hand down 12 gauge double barreled shotgun, which I hunted with. But the real jewel came on my 15th birthday. It was Christmas. It was for Christmas. I got a Winchester lever action 30-30 caliber deer rifle. Now, this was 15 years old. So it would be very difficult to convince someone who was born where I was and when I was that guns cause violence. They're definitely using violence, and apparently very well. But it's not guns that cause the violence, it's the culture and the mental attitude of the individual who commits violence. But boy, everybody had guns. We used to sit on our front porch and shoot starlings off the electric wires across the street. Yeah, really. And there was just no violence at all. Violence, no.
Amazing stories. I mean, you'll find many in the book. We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls. Larry Farrar, our guest. A few minutes left in the program. Who is the audience, do you think, for the book? Because I'm thinking people in our age category would love to go back and reflect on that time because we can relate to it. Younger people, I think, would be interested as well as to the foundation that you had and the foundation that that the boomers had that we hear so much about. Who's the audience? Is there a specific audience? But I guess what I'm saying is I think anybody would be interested in picking up a copy of this and reading it.
Rick, you're absolutely right. And there were people who thanked me for writing the book because they said that it brought back memories to them. And if I would run across somebody that had been born and raised in a small town, why, off it would go. They would start telling stories, and I would start telling stories, and away it would go. And anyone that went to a one-room schoolhouse, definitely, they were very, very pleased with the book and glad that I wrote it. One day, a library from one of the local high schools in Pennsylvania called me and asked me if it would be all right if she had put a couple copies of my book in the school library. And I said, oh, heavens, no. And she thought the same as you, Rick, that there is something there. There is something there for young people. And she was very encouraged and hoped that she could get some young people to read it. But I think she and I both agreed that if nothing except the title caused them to pick it off the shelf, why? She thought she would be halfway home there. So, but as you state, it's a It's witty, it's humorous, relaxing read for anybody at all.
I mentioned you've been called a modern-day Will Rogers for someone who's a writer. That has to be sort of the ultimate compliment. Who were some of your influences that shaped your observational skills and your writing skills?
Yeah, well, one of the individuals was the one who pointed out that, at least to him, I seemed to be a modern-day Will Rogers. I was invited back for the 25th anniversary of the graduating class. And since I was the president, well, I gave a little talk and a little speech. And after that, why, he was a teacher and taught me in high school, came up and he said, "Larry, I always thought that you were blah, 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 modern day World Series, Will Rogers." So there's always a teacher, maybe two teachers, who influence, I think, every child.
Yes.
And they should be proud of that. And some of the people that I worked for, too, was also an inspiration. And I hope that I inspired some of the people that worked for me, and I'm sure that I did. So you do that, and it kind of comes back to you and helps you with the next effort and so forth.
How much fun was this going back and going through all of the mental notes that you've taken over the years and writing this story and sharing the story? I would think this would be such an enjoyable trip back into time for you in writing this story.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And one of the interesting parts, which I really was not that aware of, was when I mentioned after the National Pike, I think it was called now, U.S. Route 40, some I-70, did not come through West Middletown. As I mentioned, the town just went dead. There was eight inns and hotels. They shut down. There were a dozen businesses, everything from harness making to undertaking, I guess. And they all left the town. Of course, it took over a period of years. But that was the main reason that I think that the Wall Street Journal was interested, because of the unique situation where everything is still there. Most of the buildings were built either in the 1820s or before, so the colonial architect there, and the culture is definitely there. Matter of fact, like the people who live there now, the few, I think, when the Journal wrote the article, there was 200 people or so. They are proud of the fact that they're pure 19th century. And as they would say back home, we aim to keep it that way. So that was the unique situation.
Yes.
That I really wasn't aware of. And that's what the Wall Street Journal was interested in. And as I stated before, I wanted to kind of document that and get that all down for people.
Well,
but it was really an opportunity. And as you say, a lot of fun to go back and relate everything.
Well, a job well done. The book is We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls. You're a talented storyteller. I love the observational skills that you have. Are you working on anything, another book?
No, I'm not. My wife probably learned as much as anyone in that process, because she typed it all. And Rick, one thing that I didn't mention, from the one-room school, I am a very, very poor speller. Matter of fact, if I don't get a letter in the mail every day, I tell people I forget how to spell my name. So this was a labor of love, and I'm not sure I can take another one.
Well, if this is the only one, job well done. The book is We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls by Larry Farrar, our guest on the program. Googling is F-A-R-R-A-R. You'll find the book available at stratton-press.com, the bookstore, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on to get information on the book. It's a great trip down memory lane, a special part of Larry's life, where he grew up. It's a great story. Larry, it's been fun. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you, Rick, and it has been an honor. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Larry Farrar, our guest in the program. The book We All Wrote on the Same Outhouse Walls. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.